Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, yes, the reason for the two documents is after the last meeting, I did what I thought the committee desired, and that is reflected in the draft of the 1st of March. But I had a further discussion with Mr. Jeffrey, a member. We had certain proposals or additional thoughts, and I added that on or into the document of the 5th of March, Chair. But to explain to members very briefly, Chair, what I've done is similar to what we do with amending legislation, where I've changed the text, I've put a solid line, underlined it, and where I've taken something out of the original text, I've put it in square brackets and in bold. So that you will already find on the document of the 1st of March. And then the one on the 5th of March, members will see that there are highlights included there. Now the highlights just indicate the changes between the document of the 1st of March and the 5th of March. Yeah, but with your leave, I will go directly to the one of 5 March, because I believe members will anything want to engage with the proposals in that document. Yeah. Then the very first change is something that wasn't raised by the committee. The 5th, I'm working from documents of the 5th of March, Chair. It wasn't raised at all in the committee. It is just something that came to my attention as I read the document again. I'm not going to take a long time on this, Chair. It's very technical. I just thought that this is not an act, so there's not really an enactment clause, but that introductory part. The original says the Minister of Justice, etc., my regulations, but I do not think that is correct in terms of what the law stipulates. And I had a discussion with some of the state law advisors in the state law advisors' offices. They said that I am actually correct. One should bear in mind the wording of the Act, and that's why I'm proposing that we start off the whole regulation by saying that Parliament, having considered the regulations tabled by the Minister in terms of Section 13.7, approve the regulations in the schedule as follows. Like I said, it's not a big deal, Chair, very technical. I don't know if members want to comment on that.
Any comments on the proposal? Instead of saying the minister has in consultation with the Chief Justice made the regulations in the schedule, We say Parliament has considered, having considered the regulation, then finally we. Any comments on that? I have not said the visitor number one. Any further one?
Well, Chair, I would agree with the essence of that opening paragraph, but I'd like to know why do we remove the word "the" before Parliament? Because my understanding is that you would want to remove the word "the" if you are merely saying Parliament having considered. But when you actually describe this Parliament, then it normally would be saying the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa.
That is just the word that Parliament always follows with legislation, Chair. It says Parliament of the Republic and acts as follows. It never says that. I thought just stay consistent, but there's nothing on it.
Honourable
Jeffrey,
just on that, our legislation says Parliament of the, that human rights bill we're dealing with this morning in the Justice Committee, Parliament of the Republic of South Africa and acts as follows, not the Parliament.
Okay, I think are we agreed that we select this proposed on the document of the 5th of March 2013. Okay, you can proceed.
Chair, and then in Regulation 1, it's the definitions. Members will note, I've added two definitions, one of acting judge and one of judge. The only reason for that is in the context of these regulations. When we refer to an acting judge, members would have realized that there's a special dispensation being proposed in respect of acting judges. but there might be confusion in the sense that a judge of the Supreme Court of Appeal might, for example, temporarily be appointed as the acting deputy president of that court, or a judge of the SCA may temporarily be appointed to the Constitutional Court and he will be an acting judge. And I don't want to leave any room for any arguments there, and that's why I've done this check. Then to regulation 2, the first one there, I send subject to sub-regulation 2, the registrable interest of judges in active service, judges who have been discharged from active service, and those of judges' immediate family members are listed as in Annex A. I think the first thing that is clear from that is that acting judges are being removed there because a special dispensation is being introduced for them. And then there's 2, that is the proviso clause, 2A, simply that the interests of any judge older than 75 years of age are not registrable at all. But if such a judge is called on to perform service as a judge, the head of court where the judge performs that service may, on application in chambers by a party to proceedings before the judge, require the judge to disclose to the head of court and the party in question whether the judge has any interests that may or may be perceived to prejudice the integrity of those proceedings. If the service in question is not related to a particular court, the application may be made to the Chief Justice. In this regard, Chief, firstly, I think we must be realistic. There's not a strong likelihood that a judge older than 75 years of age would be called upon to perform some kind of service. But then again, it is not impossible, especially if you look at commissions of inquiry. It may well be that a person with particular talents might be approached. So this will cater for that eventuality, Chair, and again, I think we must be realistic. It's not likely that this section would ever kick in practice, that it would be applied, but it is possible if necessary. Then 2B, that's a more important one. The interests of a judge's dependent children are registrable if the judge is in active service. In other words, if you're in active service, the interests of your dependent children would always be registrable. Members might recall that at the previous meeting there was a feeling that in all cases the interests of family members should be disclosed on a voluntary basis. But this follows from my subsequent conversation with Mr. Jeffrey, and it was put forward that this should be an option, that at least as far as your dependent children are concerned, those interests must always be registrable, just to allay any fears that you're putting fixed property or shares, etc., in the name of a minor that is totally under your control. Then see the interest of the judges.
Hold on, Mr. Chilang, Honorable
Jeffrey. Can I speak on that, or do you want Mr. Langer to finish? Do you want him to finish the section? Or shall I raise it?
Basically finished, Chair, and I think you see it's very simple. It's just other immediate family members.
No.
It's completely voluntary if you want to discuss.
Chair, look, I don't think that, I mean, what I understand from Mr. Skosana is that you've got 4 categories of judges. You've got judges in active service, and they're in active service until they're 65. Then in the category 65 to 70, they have to be available to perform a certain number of hours or days or whatever duty for the minister or the president if called upon. Then from the age of 70 to 75, it's voluntary. Okay, they don't have to be available, but they can if asked. Then from the age of 75 plus, they are out to pasture. So my understanding of what we were saying in the last meeting, and this is from the last meeting, is that we said judges under 65, those are the ones in active service, must disclose. Judges 65 to 70 must disclose, and that's covered by 2.1. The issue that I think Mr. De Lange may have confused what I was saying, and and what I thought we'd agreed to in the last meeting, is that the 70 to 75, the yellow bit, that, okay, interests of a judge is older than 75 are not registrable, full stop. But the rest of that applies to a judge 70 to 75. So the regime basically is if you're in active service or you are required, if you're in the 65 to 70 year age group, you're required to make yourself available, you must disclose. But then in the 70 to 75 year old, you only have to work if you want to. Then it's the same as the provisions relating to an acting judge. If there's a complaint, that's only when you have to disclose. And that, Mr. De Lange, Mr. De Lange doesn't seem to be following me on. But that was my understanding from what Mr. Skorsana had talked about with the judges. So it basically should be, one is fine, that deals with judges in active service and judges discharged from active service, that is the 65 to 70 year olds. But the first bit of two applies to the over 75s. But then but if the judge is called upon, that should apply to the 70 to 75 year olds. They are the ones who are doing voluntary duty, as it were. And because most of them won't be doing duty, they only have to disclose if they're called upon to do duty and somebody complains that there may be a conflict. That was my understanding of what we discussed last time. So that's one. I then want to get on to immediate family and spouses. I don't know if I should just deal with this point first. That's what I think what I understood we agreed upon last time. Four regimes. Active service, discharge from active service but still liable for duty, that is the under 70s. 70 to 75 where you may be asked to perform duty and you can if you want to. And the over 75s where there's no registration.
Let us deal with this aspect and then maybe before we can proceed. Honorable Kuranov.
Just to say, I support.
Any opposing view?
No.
None. Mr. Tilanga, you will capture that.
So yes, just for clarity, so I think what we need is a new category, in fact, to be added here, 70 to 75 years. I think where the confusion came in, for me in any event, is, as I said earlier, and just before this meeting, the problem is a judge can actually be on active service until the age of 75 years, depending on how long he or she has done service. I think that's where my, yes. So you're allowed to carry on until 75, and then, of course, there will always be, you will have to declare everything as a judge on active service. But I think what I need to do is capture that category, 70 to 75 years, and which will then be, yeah, no, I think I've got it.
I mean, I'm just, Chair, through you, I'm just worried, Mr. De Lange, because we've had discussions and not finding each other, and maybe it's not as simple as I think or we think. Maybe he should just speak to Mr. Skorsana, because it's on the basis of the information that Mr. Skorsana gave us. And it basically would be, as I said, his information to us was, look, if they're working, they must disclose. If they've got a duty to give days, they must disclose. The category, this new category, was on the understanding that there's a group of 70 to 75-year-olds who aren't working, or may not be working, but can be called upon to voluntary do particular cases. And then the acting judge stuff, as you've got there, would apply. Chair, then, maybe on the issue of the immediate family, look.
Before that, there is a hand from Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies for being late, but I think you and Nick Kuranov might be able to assist, but there was one application by a judge who I think was older than 70, was bombed from the land court. Judge Bomb. And he had to apply because he was older than 70 and he still wanted to, or they wanted him to continue in the land court, I think it was. So just make sure that the age is 70, not 75, because there might be an instance where you would have to come back to the JSC who then approved that application and said he could continue to serve until the age of 75. There's one application I recall, I think it was 70, and he had to apply.
As far as I'm understanding it, that he would be in active service, and the laws relating to, the regulations relating to judges being in active service would apply no matter how old they are. The category we're talking about of the 70 to 75 year olds are judges who are no longer in active service, and but who may be called, as I understand it from Mr. Scorsano, and this is what Mr. DeLange should check, who may be called upon voluntarily to do some duties. And we were saying, look, if they're not actually, the 65, the judge is not in active service, in other words, the retired ones, so you might have other ones hanging around longer, they're covered by the active service. But the ones that retire at 65, that when they're 65 to 70, they have to be available for duty. And therefore they must disclose, although the category in the register is slightly different, which I think is fine. But so they retired at whatever age, but when they hit 70, they do not have to give days to the minister. That's voluntary. So then we're saying if they fall into that category, so they retire, they're not on active service, then they only have to disclose like an acting judge if they're called upon to do something and they do it and there's a complaint.
Honourable Smith, in other words, there will be a category that Mr. DeLange will capture. It will cover a situation of an instance that you have mentioned.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I don't know exactly how it will have an impact, but maybe I just raise for the purpose of if it does impact, how does it impact? But it fits within the regime as indicated.
Otherwise, they would have to disclose, I mean.
I will also, I think it will be most helpful or the best if I just compile, after my discussion with Mr. Scorsano, and having a look at the Judges Remuneration and Conditions of Employment Act, put the one page of these are the categories of judges that we're dealing with, and so we can all come in the picture. I think part of the problem for me was I've always been in the impression, and I may or may not be correct, that that obligation to be available to perform service lapses as soon as you reach the age of 70. So I'm not too sure that is correct, but I'll follow it up and I'll come back to you very soon.
No, that's what he... For you, that's what you said.
Lapses at you no longer have a duty at 70, but between 70 and 75 you may still be asked, but then it's voluntary. Okay, so you don't have a duty to do anything, but you're sitting at home, the president comes along and says, will you chair this commission? You say fine, but you've got no duty to give your days, and only then if you say fine and then somebody raises a complaint.
But Chair, there I'm fairly confident I'm correct. You've got a duty until 70. After that, yes. The president can ask somebody who's 90 years of age to chair a commission. There's nothing preventing that.
Well, Mr. Scorsano's thing was after 75, the president can't ask you. That was his, what I'd understood. I might have been incorrect.
Of course, there's a constitutional cutoff that says a judge retire age 75. That's the maximum age. But that doesn't mean that you cannot ask him to do a commission of inquiry or anything like that. You cannot preside in a court anymore.
Shouldn't we say let Mr. DeLange discuss it with Mrs. Kosana, and then as he is saying, you just put the one page and say, here is a category of the judges. Honourable Smith?
Yes, Mr. Chair, because it appears that between 70 and 75, he may serve upon application being approved. 75, he must retire. So there is a category, and therefore I agree with John Jeffrey, where he says there should be a different category to cater for that particular 5-year period, I suppose.
But I promise
you
also
remember you. Okay, shall we proceed?
There's an immediate family, and I want to link it to another change I think should happen here, and it's basically relating to the whole nature of what we're trying to do here. I don't, and that is basically, what happens if a judge doesn't disclose? It's not provided for. And I think the issue for me would be that, I mean, I don't think we've, Mr. DeLange, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we've made it a crime not to disclose.
No, it's the Act says that the failure to disclose must be reported by the registrar, and there must be a disciplinary proceeding.
Okay. This register, the proceeding up. Because look, what I wanted to say is, look, maybe for judges, they should disclose. And yes, if that's in the act, I think that's fine. My fear is that, you know, the act does say immediate family must disclose. An immediate family is, in relation to a judge, refers to spouse, civil partner, permanent life partner of that judge, and includes dependent children of and family members living in the same household as that judge. Now, it's been pointed out that with MPs, dependent children don't have to disclose. Spouses do, but it's not enforced. Generally, the last meeting we were talking about not having spouses disclose. What I thought the regime should be as far as, well, that what we should look at is require spouses to disclose directly, but simply require the registrar to publish a report on the on the spouses who have not disclosed. So it's basically put into the court of public opinion, and the same with the judges. Let it just be known publicly. Well, you can't discipline the spouse. Okay, the judges have to be disciplined because that's what the act says, and we're not changing the act. But as far as the spouses, if they don't disclose, we shouldn't say it's voluntary, but if they don't disclose, then it will just be publicly known they haven't disclosed, and it's up to the judge and his or her spouse as to whether they're going to. Because my worry is if we just leave out spouses, if the judge does want to hide some assets through his or her spouse, it's easy to do that. So I don't know what members feel about that provision.
Can I hear some comments on this proposal? I've seen Honorable Kuranov.
Chair, I'm going to be short. I think we should scrap B, and then obviously scrap immediate in C, and C becomes B. I'm comfortable with that. Then it's really over to the judge to disclose in that manner it is described in C. That will become B. But to burden them further, I'm feeling uncomfortable.
Honorable Shekhar?
If we can't force spouses to disclose, then I don't think it's fair to publicise the fact that they haven't disclosed. I mean, I think it's quite prejudicial towards them, and, you know, if there are really issues where people are suspected on legitimate grounds to have been hiding assets, then they must take other, you know, they must report it via other channels, but put a complaint against the judge if he's busy channeling, or she is busy channeling through the party's details. But I really don't think it's unfairly prejudicial to the spouses to have the whole list publicised, you know, in the public domain for something we can't actually force them to do in the first place.
Are there any further comment on this issue? Pilani Manjaka.
Thanks, Chair. I think in terms of not forcing spouses to disclose, almost it feels like it defeats the purpose of what we're doing, because indeed, like Honorable Jeffries is saying, what if there are assets that are hidden through the spouse? So his suggestion that maybe we should publish the names of the spouses that have not been that have not disclosed, in order for us to expose them to public court, just in case there's something wrong, because you might find that there's nothing that is wrong, they just haven't disclosed. But in the event that the public also knows something that has not been disclosed, it might actually be helpful. Otherwise, the whole issue of spouses is very contentious, because it actually also begins by what you define as as a spouse or a partner, because others are partners, they're not spouses. When we discuss this for parliamentarians, we can also recognize that there will be homosexual and lesbian relationships, and how do you deal with that? But indeed, where it's quite clear and evident who the judge's partner or spouse is, my support to what Honorable Jeffries has alluded to is that make it public. There will be some register that can be accessed by whoever is interested.
What is the House saying concerning Honorable Schaefer's comments to say we are unfairly prejudicing them, because sort of we are putting a spotlight on saying the spouses of these judges have not disclosed, and then it may be raising some other suspicions and the like. What is the feeling of the House about that? I've seen Honorable Smith, Honorable Jeffrey.
Mr. Chair, I agree, because you're my colleague, but for the purpose of how do you provide for the instance where a spouse is married out of community property without the accrual system? That individual, that spouse, has got no interest at all in your particular estate. None. How are you going to force your estate to prepare? And I do prefer C, because it places an onus, an ethical duty on him. Not a statutory duty. It places anyone in a very difficult position if he or she becomes a judge to say, no, I don't want you. Because he has to make an election. And if he's got nothing to hide, he will declare, well, there's nothing to hide. But B is out. I don't prefer B at all. But C is fine, because it's an ethical, what's it, ethical conjunction. It's a conjunction,
obligation.
Obligation, ethical obligation. But nothing more, which is fine.
Honourable Jeffrey, I just wanted to say that the Act defines immediate family as spouse, civil partner, or permanent life partner. Includes dependent children of and family members living in the same household as the judge. That's what's in the Judicial Service Commission Act. What I would suggest that we do is can an option be put as an option, that a requirement that, so you've got here, the nobody seems to, under this option, want B, but you've got then C, which is the voluntary disclosure of immediate family, that would include dependent children. So that stays as one option. And the other is a requirement that dependent, immediate family must disclose. And then it would be linked to the registrar providing an annual report on who is not disclosed. Because yes, if you're going to be, Mr. Schmidt has spoken about married out of community of property, not in the accrual system, but what happens if you're married in community of property? And the judge says, okay, give it to my wife. And in fact, half that is going to accrue to you. Even if you have a fight with the wife and want to divorce her 2 years later, half of that you'll get. So can we, I'm not saying we must do it. I know the judges don't like it, but can we look at that as a possibility, that we see an option for a requirement that immediate family must disclose, and let that apply only to judges in active service.
Okay, suggesting that we put it on the shelf, we think about it as an option. Shall we then proceed on another aspect?
We're moving the B then, sir.
The proposal that, yes, according to Honorable Smith, is that we remove the B. Is there anyone who's opposed to that suggestion?
If I can just make sure that I'm understanding correctly, so there will be two options. One is this voluntary,
disclosure, yes, and the other would be a kind of obligation on the judge, yes.
And that would be linked to a duty on the registrar, and then you provide a report about it in the immediate family who have it disclosed.
Okay, then we can turn to... See, then in three, a judge in active service, this is further distinction, or just confirmation of the distinction we've already decided on. In active service, or who had been discharged from active service, who is younger than 75 years of age. No, who is younger than... I'm in the hands of the committee there, Chair.
Oh, sorry, just before that, Chair, 3-2-3, yes, the acting judges.
Sure.
Okay. Now, this is what we asked for. Well, we asked, what we had said was, well, we didn't give much detail, but what we said was acting judges should... you know, not have to disclose, but if there was a complaint, that the head of the court could require them to disclose. Now, what Mr. DeLange has put is on application in chambers by a party to the proceedings before that acting judge, require the acting judge to disclose. So it's limited to a party to the proceedings. So you've got a suspicion that this judge is has briars every, or somebody's, the judge's neighbours lead to you that the judge is having briars every Saturday afternoon with the with the one party before his court, and you then, but you can't prove it, but you then go with that information and ask for a disclosure as to whether there is or not. But it's limited to party to a proceeding. If the media get wind of it, they then would have to go to the applicant, to a party to the proceeding. So I just want to point that out, that it's sort of fairly limited. I did raise it with some people from the media, but they haven't come back to me, so I would imagine that if they get information, they would have to go to one of the parties to say, here's the information, why don't you move this motion?
Are there any comments concerning that it is limited to a party to the proceedings? Should it be wider than that? Should any other person, member of the party?
You don't want some busybody who's got nothing better to do keep moving applications. So, yeah, I agree there needs to be some restriction. I'm just questioning, is it too narrow?
Honourable Sheikhan?
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, if it's an acting judge, then the only people that would really probably be influenced are one of the parties to the action, I would imagine. So, I mean, I don't think that's a problem. If somebody has genuine information and they really believe that it's prejudicing that one of the parties, then they can come and tell the party that information. And if they haven't got it, I mean, if the party doesn't know about it, then they won't be concerned about it anyway. I mean, what purpose would an outsider have in coming to lay a charge like this?
Okay, it seems we are agreed, we leave it to the party, to the proceedings. Okay, thanks. Honourable Glenna Machaki.
I'm not sure whether this is in order. Would there be any problem if there is some way disclosure of interest is connected to the assignment in particular also that the judge has been given? If he's got to sit in a commission and this interest, even if it's not direct interest on him, but some of his family members, wouldn't there be a way of actually making it point that the judge is compelled to disclose before accepting the responsibility? you can quickly allow us to address some of these issues that we think are contentious, including the spouses that are not disclosing for whatever reason with marital arrangement. But if the judge himself knows that some of his family members are heavily involved, it's about mining, and one of his family members is a mining giant, and he's got to be sitting in a commission. Why shouldn't it be the responsibility of the judge himself, either to excuse himself or to indicate so?
Yeah, my understanding is that we have said the judge will be compelled to disclose.
Isn't that the code of conduct?
I beg your pardon?
That's in the code of conduct, isn't it?
Yes, we dealt with in the code of conduct the first session of this, because there were two sets, the code of conduct, the code of judges conduct. These are only the registrable interest, the rules for registrable interest. It's taken care of. Yes. All right, shall we proceed, Mr. Dilang?
Thank you, Chair. Then we get to 3.1. Like I said, I just need confirmation, should it be who has been. So it would read the judge in active service who has been discharged from active service, or who has been discharged from active service and who is younger than 75 years of age, must disclose particulars of all his or her registrable interests on a form which corresponds substantially with Form 1. And then, of course, the rest relating to the immediate family members would depend on which option the committee eventually opt for with regard to the family members. That is really the only change there. Chair, what is noteworthy, I think, is why I'm saying judge in active service or who has been discharged from active service, younger than 75 years of age, these are really the only category of judges who will be required always to make disclosures. So your acting judges would not be affected, your judges older than 75 years would not be affected. If you're falling in any other category, you would be affected to some extent and you would have to make a disclosure. Then,
that's one.
My understanding of what we were doing, and it was based on Mr. Skorsana's input, was that it is the cutoff, once you've been discharged from active service, the cutoff is 70, not 75. That after 70, you do not have an obligation to do any duties. You only do the duties if you want to. And this is not corresponding then with what we were saying earlier. The 70 to 75 year olds who have been discharged, who are then doing it voluntarily, they fit into the category, same category as the acting judges. So shouldn't it be that he's younger than 70 years of age? Judge who's been discharged from active service and who is younger than 70 years, not 75. Because the 70-year-olds, 65 to 70, as far as I understand it, you have a duty to perform service when requested to do so. Therefore, you must keep disclosing. But after 70, that duty falls away and it becomes completely voluntary.
Jeez, that could well be, but then 3, I think we must look at 3.2a again. That would also need to be addressed. This is basically the norm. Is once you pass a certain age, it's not registrable.
What we were saying earlier, that it's the category of the 70 to 75 years olds who have been discharged from active service, that they would not have to register. If they've discharged from active service, and Mr. Skorsana is correct, they would not have to disclose. They would only have to disclose, as an acting judge does, if they're dealing with a matter and somebody complains.
But this will link up with that document that I'll prepare for the committee in the next year, and I should go through all those scenarios.
He said, on this point, there's agreement that from the party, it's not yet on this agreement.
Yes, okay, no, thank you.
Then 4, there's been no changes.
Sorry, before that. 2, I'm sorry, we are doing a proper job. The judge must
do the first disclosure within 30 days of his or her appointment, and thereafter within 30 days after acquiring or learning of the existence of a new registrable interest. Now, it's been informally raised with me that that's quite onerous in terms of if they've got share portfolios and the shares keep changing, that it's and we don't have to do it as MPs. I mean, there is a thing around so it basically they thought the you see, there is a thing under 3.4. During March each year, a judge must inform the registrar in writing whether the entries are accurate, an accurate reflection. So in a sense, that's a bit of a conflict between 2 and 4. But aren't we going a bit overboard with saying, look, 3 months of you knowing that your things have changed and it's a share portfolio, and in fact, by the time you've disclosed, they've changed again?
Mr. Jeffries is perfectly correct, Chairperson. Where it deals with share portfolios and stocks, very hard every 30 days. I mean, there's times when they change every week. So what we did here in Parliament is require the MP to do it once a year, every March, as is provided for here. And we should do the same for the judges. It's too onerous to expect the judge every 30 days now to be changing and checking. It's far too onerous.
Okay, it seems we're in agreement to say let it be once a year.
So then, as I understand it, it would be 2 would be must lodge the first disclosure of the registrar within 30 days of his or her appointment as a judge, full stop, delete the rest, and then 4 would be remain as it is. During March every year, the judge must inform the registrar in writing if there are any changes.
Okay, Chair, are the members happy with 30 days? Should not be a longer period than that?
How long does Parliament require?
Yeah.
So we say 1 month for 1 month for judges.
Okay.
Let us proceed to the line.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think there's anything else or any consequential things resulting from that. We can go to 4.4. There's nothing changing in 4, Chair. This is very technical, but strictly speaking, 4 is not one of those regulations that actually need approval. So I'm just going to skip that. 5 is the register. There's been one big change here, Chair. Now, this would again depend on, and in fact, it's not going to depend on anything. The original version had a rather elaborate procedure in terms of which other people could apply to have access to the confidential part of the register. Now, depending on the final nature of these regulations, what we foresee is that the public part would always reflect those interests of judges on active service that is of interest, like shares, directorships, all those kind of things. All the other information would always be in the confidential part, and that would relate to the physical address of the property, the description of the property, the identifiable aspects, and of course all the things or assets registered interest of the immediate family members. And having a look at the Parliament's version of your register as well, I couldn't find, there's no mechanism for third parties to gain access to the confidential part. And I don't think there's any business that any person has to apply to have access to the confidential part. So I'm proposing that we omit that completely. It's not necessary to this provision, Chair.
So only people, if there's a complaint, then the person investigating will have access, the head of court,
the
and that will
court,
they
yeah,
can be
yeah, yeah. Okay. They'll have to do something very specific.
Yeah.
Of course.
So it wouldn't
start me
any of investigation
or anything.
Okay.
Are we happy? Are we okay, thank you. Honourable Jeffrey?
Happy. Obviously, if we do go for the immediate family option, then there, details would be in the confidential section, but I would agree that there's no business for anyone to go looking at it apart from the head of court and the registrar. And so once you provide for access, then you create problems. So I think that is fine. The only thing would be under 5, if it can go with the option of the requirement for the immediate family, that the registrar must annually provide a report on the immediate family who have disclosed. So that the public can see who's disclosed and who hasn't. It goes with the thing. It's basically the force of public opinion. So it's with you don't want that option at this point, but it's basically, I mean, the basic thing is the fear of if there is a corrupt judge who wants to hide things, that he or she will shuffle it through the spouse or a dependent child. I don't think you can force the dependent child or the spouse to disclose, but if they don't, let their names be published, or let the names be published of those who have, so people know. Then otherwise the public is not going to know.
Yeah. And
the other thing would be, should there be a duty on the registrar? Is the registrar going to be at full time to go through the... I mean, although the judge's registrar thing will be public, should there be a duty on the registrar to have, so with the public section, anyone can look at it and pick up points. Should there be a duty on the registrar to do that and to report untoward matters to the head of court? I'm asking that as a question. I mean, doesn't, through your chair to Mr. Landers, as former ethics chair, doesn't our registrar in Parliament, doesn't she provide a play a proactive role, or does she only wait for complaints to come in?
It's something that we've debated extensively on the ethics committee, and I'm aware that there have been attempts by civil society organizations and NGOs for the registrar in Parliament to do precisely that, which is to be proactive, as opposed to ensuring that the register is properly compiled, everyone has disclosed their registrable interests, and once that is done, to publish the register. And that's the sum total of her work, until she receives a complaint, and then she begins an investigation. There has been a move for some years now that says that there should be a proactive approach, whereby either the registrar or the ethics committee should actually go through the register and ensure that things are as they say they are, which means then going to people like Cipro and asking the Auditor General to conduct audits to ensure that all your companies are in fact registered in the register. But Chair, that is something that this ad hoc committee is going to have to think about. I see nothing wrong with asking the registrar to be proactive, but he may lack capacity and resources, and he may need to refer to other people like the Auditor General, and I'm not sure that, I don't know whether that would work or not.
Does that hear any comment on this? Yes, Mr. Chair. I personally don't have a principled problem in favour of against it, except that I think, you know, when a complaint is lodged, it's lodged with a specific information at your disposal, and that's going to guide your investigation. In other words, to establish whether that judge has the following properties which he didn't disclose. I think for a registrar who normally doesn't have the investigative capacity, normally doesn't, to go and determine whether he has other registrable properties, or go in the stock exchange, or go and... It becomes, I don't say it shouldn't, but it becomes an onerous task where it's as going to look for a needle in a haystack or something, you know, but it doesn't take me neither here nor there, I suppose.
So how do we...
what is the feeling of this committee? How should it be handled? Honorable Schaefer?
I just wanted to make a comment on the previous thing, but I'll get back to this. I mean, on the issue of the spouses, I mean, you're going to put the information in the confidential section anyway, but then if you don't disclose, you're going to publicize names of people who do or don't disclose, thereby drawing a negative inference against the spouse. I don't think that's fair. On the issue of the registrar, I don't think there should be, perhaps unless there's something like really obvious that looks very strange, but I don't know how we would define that. I mean, if you see something really that looks very suspicious, then maybe we could look at something. I don't think there should be a general duty to place a positive obligation on the registrar to investigate properties and so on, but if they suddenly see a particular judge, you know, acquiring 3 properties in the space of a year or something like that, perhaps then they should have an obligation to report it. But I think it might be difficult to define where, how it would be done, in which case. Otherwise, I'd rather leave it for if there's a complaint.
Yes, in other words, there should at least be some smoke, and then the registrar will look for the fire. Where is the fire? What causes the smoke?
Maybe the compromise solution is to say the registrar may report anything that is, so it's an option untoward, to the head of court or the chief justice.
Possible
irregularity to any concerns, any suspected irregularity to the head of court or the chief justice.
All right. Anything else, Mr. Dilang?
Just again, for clarity's sake, if we look at page 3, that's sub 5. Is that something we want added here then? It says, if the registrar has reason to believe that the judge has failed or is failing to comply with the provision.
What number?
Sub 5. It's regulation 3.5. But
I'm talking about the case, I think 3.5 stays, I'm talking about the case where the judge has disclosed and it doesn't look good. He's suddenly buying a lot of wine farms very quickly. Okay. 3.5 relates to where they haven't complied with the with what's here, or the information is incorrect or misleading. But in the case I'm talking about, it would be where they have disclosed and the register thinks, look, something's not right here. There may be a conflict of interest.
Should we not perhaps put it in under there? Maybe make it a separate section, number 6, and move number 6 down to number 7. I think maybe that's a better place to put it, but it must be an additional ground.
Right. Is that the end of the issues to be discussed?
No, then we've got Annex A with a few points there. It's Annex
A is that is the registrable interests, part 1. What I've done here is to elaborate following the last meeting. In other words, that indicates that we've got what are we disclosing in the confidential part of the register, and also indicating whether it would be in the public part or the confidential part. I think the most important one here, or 2 changes here, would be that point 4, where we've omitted income or other benefits, so it will only be any royalties derived from the application of Section 11 of the Act. And the reason for that is quite simple. Section 11, in respect of judges on active service, only allows for royalties, nothing else. So that's no use putting income on the benefit there. Then 5, the committee decided they didn't want the sponsorships, etc. They had that item removed. And as far as the value of the gifts are concerned, I think the consensus was that it should be 1,500 rand. I may add, it's a pity. I would have preferred a provision such as we have in the Executive Ethics Code that gives you some discretion to adjust that amount just by proclamation in the Gazette, but I don't think we have the discretion yet, so we will have to every 5 years or so adjust this amount.
How
does Parliament one get done? Because can we not link it to Parliament and just say the amount applicable to members of parliament? How does ours get decided?
It might even be possible, Chair, but it's not user-friendly legislation on the other hand. Would you need to find then something else? What you would ideally want to bring there, what the position is. It's not a big deal, Chair. It's really maybe not such a big deal. Every 5 years we will just add the deal.
Jeffrey. I mean, just what's the problem with declaring sponsorships?
They're not allowed to get them.
Is that the case? Is that the reason? You've taken out five.
Yes, but that was an instruction of the committee chief, so I must say.
On the basis that they're not allowed to get them?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Look, my problem with the layout is, again, this, it doesn't correspond to the categories that I'm talking about, part one, two, and three, that we spoke about earlier. Okay, one is judges in active service. Then I thought, then what we were saying is that judges in active service and judges under 70 disclose. The disclosure is the same. Because even the ones not in active service under 70, they have a duty to perform a certain number of days work if asked. So I'm not sure why we should have part one and part two, why there should be a distinction. Then the 70 to 75 year olds don't have to disclose if they're not in active service, unless there's a complaint, and that's covered by the same as the acting judges. That would be only relating to that particular case that they're dealing with. So part three should fall away, surely.
Honorable Smith,
shouldn't we take this final decision once Mr. De Longa has come up with that schematic diagram, one page of this?
I agree, and I agree also that it is related to that other little investigation I will do. But just to remind members, for what it's worth, our main problem is still Section 11 of the Act. So regardless whether we require disclosure or not, Section 11 is very clear. No matter what your age is, if you're a judge and you get a dispensation, you're not allowed to receive any income other than your salary as a judge. And I think that is all that's been captured here in the 70 to 75 category. But, yeah.
It will not be to offer that diagram of yours.
But you see the issue is they're not allowed an income, so they're covered by Section 11 of the Act. But they don't have to disclose anything.
How do you know whether they've got the extra income?
They're not
do we finalize this issue of part three?
I think I will link it to what I'm doing, and if
there's anything else required, I will take the committee's advice. In part four would obviously also depend largely on the model that the committee may eventually opt for. At the moment, it's got that provision for voluntary disclosure of other family members, and then of course the other requirement that dependent children must always be disclosed. If that had been the case, then there was an amendment I would have proposed, Chair, but it's not necessary at this stage. Chair, then members will see if they page through the rest of the thing, all the annexures, you will find quite a lot of places where there are things underlined and in square brackets. It is all relevant, but I think it is really very technical. Until you've got the more final product, I don't think it's worth your while to look at it this from a drafter's perspective. May I just point out that every time something changes, then these forms at the back have to be amended accordingly, but I don't think you need to bother with that at this stage, Chair.
The suggestion is that you should not burden yourself with the forms. Are we agreed?
Not until the last stage, Chair. At
yes.
This time, I don't think
so. Yeah. Okay. Anything else, Mr. Chilani?
Nothing from my side, Chair.
So this brings us to the end of the meeting today, and then the way forward. Yes.
When will the provisions start coming into effect for disclosure for magistrates? They want to be like judges, so I want to know when they're going to be coming in.
On our way to the single judiciary.
But they want to be like like judges, so when they look to start applying.
When they need to be closed in a slow strike.
Alright, but on a serious note. No, on the specific issue that we're dealing with, before we deal with the officers who are on COSLO, how much time do we still need for this process? I'm raising this issue because there is a session of the JSC from the 8th to the 12th of April, and then I've also been told that there's going to be an item on the agenda when they would like to have an update on this process. If I may have some indication, Mr. Dilano, from your side to say, what should I say?
It won't take me long, Chair, by the end of the week, probably.
All right. Chairperson, I will still hear next week because we are not here.
No, but Chair, we do have a committee week. That week we return. That's a committee week.
Right.
So we can stop this lot. Do it then.
Two things. We've got to, I think, look at, we need another meeting to finalise and look at what Mr. Delana has done. And it's going to link into, I think the two issues are basically getting absolute clarity on the different categories of judges and their work responsibilities. And then to the issue of, we need to have a decision on the, what is it called, immediate family. It's clear that these meetings are not taking very long. I mean, this one is about to finish. It's an hour and a quarter. I'm sure that in that committee week, an hour can be found, which is probably all that is needed. But then, Chair, you've got to speak to your NCOP counterpart, because this has to be approved by both houses, and it's sitting in both houses. So I think you've got to find time to speak to the chair of the NCOP ad hoc and brief him on where things are and get their views, so that there's a sense at least that the committees will approve the same document.
Yes.
I mean, it's no use if we blindly carry on and finalize the document, take it to the House, and then the NCOP come and say, produce a different document.
Yes.
There's no provision in the Act for what happens there.
All right.
So, Chair, maybe what you could do is we have another meeting. I mean, you may be speaking formally to your counterpart. Then we have another meeting, and we and then you formally speak to your counterpart, and before we finally formally approve it.
Smith?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think it would be fair to say we're about 80% there, if not more. So we're basically, it's one or two issues we need to resolve. Mr. Longo, you don't seem to be convinced.
Okay. All right. Let me thank everyone, all of you, honorable members, and for having availed yourself for this meeting. Slowly but surely we're moving forward. We'll definitely put an end to this process, the ASOC committee. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.